Have you ever given thought to the approach Jesus took to changing the world? Here's the one person in all of human history that, had he wanted, could have done anything and everything. The one person in all of human history that could have individually worked with every single person on the face of the earth. This is the one person in all of human history that could have worked with the masses and the crowds and changed the world. But instead, he came into the world and started a small group. He selected out 12 men. We call them apostles. And he worked with them. And he grew them. And he sent them out to change the world. Now, I recognize that he had interaction with larger groups than this. I know we have the 70 that he sent out on a limited commission. I know that he spoke to the crowds on occasions, and the crowds would follow him around and listen to the teaching that he would give to them. But in the main, the majority of work, the lion's share of what Jesus did to change the world, was work with these 12 men. Why'd he do that? On the one hand, I recognize that when I ask that question, why, I'm whittling a little bit on God's end of the stick. I don't have a Bible verse that says, I've done it this way because. But if I were going to give a reason, if I were going to speculate, what's the main reason for Jesus working this way? Honestly, I believe it's because Jesus understood this is imitable. Others can imitate this. If Jesus had come in and done what only he could do, working with every individual, individually, all over the world, well, nobody else could do that in the years to come. But what he understood is that these 12 men that he was working with and those who were around them, that when he released them to start doing their work, they could do the same thing he had done. They could work with a group of men or women who could then work with a group of men and women who could then work with a group of men and women who could then pass that on. And through that, the world gets changed. And I think that is amazing. And because of that, we recognize that the apostles did work that way. That very first church in Jerusalem, though it started with about 3,000 members. Could you imagine that? Being in a congregation of about 3,000 members. And it didn't take long for it to be a congregation of about 5,000 members. In fact, it seems that that may have just been the men when it says 5,000. And that means with women and children, with widows. That could be a congregation of about 10,000 people. How's that going to work? In fact, we understand that, man, as a crowd gets larger and larger and larger, what actually happens for the individual is the individual becomes more and more and more isolated. So how did it work? Well, we find that while those early Christians related to one another in the crowd, they also remembered what God did through Jesus, what Jesus did when he came into the world, as he related with that group. In fact, in Acts chapter 2 and verse 46, it says, day by day attending the temple together, there's the crowd, and breaking bread in their homes, they received their food with glad and generous hearts, praising God and having favor with all the people. Breaking bread in their homes. Guys, that was not all 3,000 people going over to someone's house. That means that while they were together with the crowd, they were interacting and relating to one another in these smaller groups. We find this in Acts chapter 5 and verse 42. Every day in the temple, there's that crowd, and from house to house, they did not cease teaching and preaching that the Christ is Jesus. Again, that doesn't mean that the 5 to 10,000 Christians were meeting in someone's home. but rather that from house to house, this teaching was going on in these smaller groups. So we recognize there was this worship, there was this celebration, there was this togetherness as the crowd met at the temple and worshiped and praised God, a lot like we're doing this morning. But then there was also those smaller group relationships from house to house as they related to one another and interacted with one another, and they grew and they challenged one another and they provoked one another to love and good deeds. I mean, the reality is, when we look at that Jerusalem church, do you think it was possible, even on the very first day, for Peter or Andrew or James or John to know every one of those 3,000 people? Do you think they even knew all of their names, let alone knowing them well enough to be completely involved in their lives? There's no way. But what does it look like these men did? It looks like they followed in the footsteps of Jesus, and they worked with those who could work with others, who could work with others. We had these small group type relationships. And because of this, about 3 years ago here at this congregation, we started what we call our house-to-house process. We started what we call, it's our small groups. It's whatever kind of name you want to give to it. We call it house-to-house. And the reason for that was because we recognize that as the congregation gets bigger, the struggle for each individual is that potential for isolation. And we wanted to provide a process by which we could grow in loving one another as God loves us, loving like God. That's what a disciple does. A disciple loves like God. And so I want to share with you this morning some principles about why we have that. And I want to encourage you. I know some of you have been waiting for us to talk about our house to house and what's coming up, and we're making some shifts. And I want to share that with you. But first, I want you to know why it is so important for us to have relationships. Why it's so important for us to connect at this house to house level. I want you to look in Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verses 9 through 12. If you're using a Pew Bible, it's page 555. In Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verses 9 through 12, the preacher said, "Two are better than one, because they have a good reward for their toil. For if they fall, one will lift up his fellow, but woe to him who is alone when he falls and has not another to lift him up. Again, if two lie together, they keep warm, but how can one keep warm alone? And though a man might prevail against one who is alone, two will withstand him. A threefold cord is not quickly broken." The preacher says two are better than one. And he wraps that up by saying a threefold cord is not quickly broken. In other words, three is better than two. Now, I understand, as some would suggest, that potentially that third individual is God in this context. That's a possibility. It doesn't say that. I think it's equally possible that he is saying exactly what it sounds like. Two are better than one, and three are better than two. We might grasp from that four are better than three, and five than four. And yet, what we recognize is there does come a point as we add cords to that, it becomes so big it's unwieldy. In fact, those relationships become so disparate and diffuse, it's hard to maintain them all. And we get to a point where it stretches down to, yeah, we've got all these strands, but really these strands aren't actually helping one another. And it is so easy to be in such a large group and yet still be a single strand, to be isolated within a group. It is not the same to be alone as to be lonely. There's obviously not any one of us in here right now that is alone. Look at all these people that are around us. But I know that there are some who, despite not being alone, are lonely. And so what I want to share with you today is to extrapolate from what the preacher says here to understand that a small group is better than an isolated church member. A small group is better than an isolated church member. It is very easy to gather with saints in this large assembly and yet still be isolated, lonely. I want to explain to you why it's better for a small group than an isolated church member. Before we look at that, would you bow with me in prayer, please? God and Father in heaven, you are magnificent. You are the awesome God, holy and reverend. Whatever that third cord is within that passage in Ecclesiastes 4, we know that you're with us, and we know that you're the one that makes our relationship strong. And so we do appreciate that, and we love you for it, and we'd ask that you would make our relationship strong. We'd ask that you would grow them, that you would take those ties that bind and strengthen them. And that we would stand so close together that none of us can fall down. Father, be with our house-to-house groups. That they will provide that connection and that relationship that challenges and provokes. And I pray that you would help that to grow within our congregation so that everyone can be a part of that. And I ask, Father, that you would help us as a congregation to bring glory and honor to you, to have the unity, the peace, and the harmony that comes from a relationship rooted and grounded in you and your Son, Jesus Christ. Help us today to have better understanding and to bring glory to your name. It's through Jesus that we pray. Amen. In Ecclesiastes, we find basically four reasons why two are better than one. We find four reasons why a small group is better than an isolated church member. The very first one is because there's greater return. In Ecclesiastes 4 and verse 9, two are better than one because they have a good reward for their toil. A good reward for their toil. The reality is when two people are working together, they're going to accomplish more work than they're going to accomplish alone. They're going to accomplish more work than even if they are both working, but working alone. We need to understand that when folks come together, it increases, it multiplies the return. Now, I want you to notice it doesn't just say they'll get more work done. It's not two are better than one because they get more work done. Two are better than one because there's a greater return for the work. We just need to understand, as we add folks together to work, whether it's in evangelism or worship or teaching or encouragement or discipleship, as we add folks together in groups and in relationship, there is a greater return. There's going to be more ROI, return on investment. If you're just trying to do this on your own, you're not going to get the return on the investment that you're going to get if you band together with a group of people. It's just very simple. There is a greater return between a small group for the work they're doing than there is for an isolated church member. Why do you want to be a part of a group? Because I tell you what, you get to be involved in something that is bigger than yourself, and you get to be integrally involved, and the work that you do produces more, a greater return. The second thing he points out is there is a quicker recovery. In verse 10, for if they fall, one will lift up his fellow, but woe to him who is alone when he falls and has not another to lift him up. Woe to him who falls alone and does not have another to lift him up. When you picture this person falling, what do you envision? You know, if all you envision is someone who's just kind of tripping on a curb, I get why this picture might not make much sense to you. But what if you pictured somebody falling off the stage? What if you pictured somebody who rolled an ankle, Grant? What if you pictured somebody who fell into a pit? Now, we recognize if that guy, if that gal is alone, they're toast. They need someone else there to pick them up. And that's exactly the point. And when we think about this emotionally and psychologically and spiritually, when one has a fall, how much more dangerous it is, because that's not just a trip on a curb, that's a fall into a pit. And what we need is those who are around us that pick us up, who lift us up, who carry us, who strengthen us, who encourage us. And what we need to understand from this is that when Christians band together in these group relationships, there's a quicker recovery. Notice it doesn't say you're not going to fall. It doesn't say two are better than one because nobody ever falls. You see that? But what it understands is, guess what's going to happen to you sometime? I don't care how great you think you are, how wonderful you think you are, how strong and spiritually steadfast, and how you think it'll never, ever be a problem for me. That's not true. Every one of us falls sometime. Two aren't better than one because when there's two, they never fall. Two are better than one because we're going to fall and we need others there with us. And if we're isolated, the recovery takes a long time. In fact, sometimes it never comes. The recovery comes quicker when we're bonded together with others. The third one's a little bit odd. I admit it. It's a little bit uncomfortable. We wonder what on earth is going on here in verse 11. Again, if two lie together, they keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? This is not talking about intimacy, and it's not even talking about comfort. What I want you to understand is it means there's easier survival. A Allow me to share a picture with you. This is really the story of that old mountain man who decided to go on a hunt. And while he was out on his hunt, there was a freak blizzard that showed up in the mountain. And the snow was coming down and his body temperature is dropping and he's getting cold and he can feel it happening. He is trying to get back to his cabin where he can be protected from the elements, where he can have the fire going and he can warm up and he can survive. And he's running and he's flapping his arms and he's jumping in place and he's smacking his arms on his legs and he's even trying to start a fire, but the wind keeps blowing it out. His body temperature is dropping. He's stumbling. He's crawling. He's trying to get himself back up. And finally, his foot catches on a root and he falls on his face and just doesn't have the strength or the motivation to get back up. But that fall brought him to his senses just enough to recognize, wait a minute, that wasn't a root. And that recognition causes him to rummage around and he realizes that what's actually happened is he's fallen on top of another person who got caught out in that snowstorm. And he sees this other person and he wants to save this other person. So what remaining strength he has, he starts flapping on that fella and rubbing and shaking the jacket and doing everything he can to raise the temperature of this person that he has come across. And do you know what happened as he raised the temperature of this person he found in the snow? His own temperature was raised. And he was able to revive him. And they were able to walk and stumble together to the cabin. And together they were able to survive. That's the picture. The picture here is of survival. It's not just comfort. It's not just, boy, it's really hard to sleep when it's cold. It's the fact that when you're out at night in the cold, your life is on the line. Your life is on the line. And having somebody there with you makes survival easier. Guys, we are in a war. We are being attacked. And there are folks that are dropping like flies. You need to understand that the lone wolf, the lone lion, attacks the isolated sheep. And it's easier to survive and continue and maintain when we're reaching out and when we're connecting. Easier survival. And the fourth thing is stronger resistance. And though a man might prevail against one who is alone, two will withstand him. As we've already pointed out, we're under attack. It's not whether we'll be attacked. It's not that two people together won't ever be attacked. It's not that three people won't ever be attacked. It's the fact that two together and three together and four together, when they are attacked, can resist. And there is a stronger resistance. We are at war. This is not just, can I go to church enough to get to heaven in the end? This is, I am under attack and Satan is doing everything he can. And he's attacking through the media. He's attacking through the culture. He's attacking through society. He's attacking through the pleasures of our flesh. He is attacking in every way he can. And alone, we're not going to make it. You just need to understand that by yourself, you're not going to make it. It's not about, is it a rule to be in a group? It's about the fact that it just doesn't happen. People who are alone when they're attacked get overcome. There is a stronger resistance when we're together with a group. And so what we need to understand is a small group is better than an isolated church member. And because of that, we have developed our house-to-house process. We started it about 3 years ago. What an exciting thing as we're trying to help encourage these kinds of relationships in order to accomplish that. And yet now, having done it for 3 years, we've been listening to some of the feedback we've been getting, and it's time for us to tweak it a little bit. It's time for us to make some modifications. And I want to share with you some of the modifications. If you're a guest here today, this is a little bit different than what we normally do. This part is not so much a sermon as it is just an explanation about some of the work. And so, Dave, I know you've got some folks here. They're going to be passing out some things for us. I don't know where you are, Dave. You're here somewhere. Dave Morrow. There you go. Where's the guys? We need them to pass out those surveys. Guys, get up and pass out those surveys. If you need a pen, let them know. I think they've got pens. As we're talking through the rest of this, we're going to be going through these surveys. Or you can fill out these surveys. Please understand, don't fold it up and put it in your Bible because we're going to take it up in about 10 minutes. So I need you to fill it out now. So So I don't know if this gets edited out in the process, but if it's not edited out and you're listening on the internet, I'm waiting for the surveys to be passed out. I'll talk again in a moment. I want to talk a little bit about these modifications that we're going to be making. If you're a guest here, we do want to point out that as a member of this congregation, I think this is one of the great blessings that we have, is trying to help folks be involved in these relationships. We're not going to just walk through this survey, but I do want you to fill out this survey as we're talking about this. You may want to wait a second to know what all of it means before you just fill it out, though. Let me talk about some of the modifications. The main modification, the main change that we're making is that 3 years ago, our house-to-house process was a very program-driven idea. In other words, I was the one who was proposing it, and I was the one who was running it, and I was the one who set up the program and made the rules, and this is the way it's going to work. So there was a lot of structure, and I think that was good at the beginning. But now we've moved past that, and it's time to remove some of that structure. It's time to take some of the training wheels off, if we can use that illustration. But that means there's going to be a bit of a change, and we're going to have a little bit of a rough spot, and I know we are. I just want to explain how this is going to work. We're moving this from being more program-driven and more structure-centered to being more leader-guided. And what I mean by leader-guided is the leaders of the groups, guided more by the leaders of the individual groups. Here's what this is going to mean practically. Practically what this is going to mean is that we're empowering the leaders of the groups to guide the meeting agenda. When we first started this, we had a pretty structured meeting agenda. Every group did exactly the same thing. And that's been basically our discipleship model of you're going to get together, going to have some time of sharing. You're going to talk about those questions that are in the program that correspond with the Sunday morning sermon. And then you're going to have a time of prayer. And there's some great benefits to doing it that way. And that is still going to be the backbone of what we're doing in house to house. This doesn't mean there won't be any of those kind of groups. That's been working for a tremendous number of people. Those groups are going to be continuing on. We're calling those our discipleship groups because that's really the idea. But we have received some feedback from some people that said, you know what? I mean, this is fine and this is good and I can tell that it's helping a lot of people, but it's not really doing it for me. What I would really like is a group that got together and focused on issues of worship, like maybe a group that's focused on singing or a group that's focused on prayer. Or some others said, I'd really like to have a group that's focused on a particular Bible topic or a particular Bible textual study. I'd really rather have a group that's in that kind of thing, more deeper Bible study. Or I'd really rather have a group that's focused on evangelistic work. And as I've told everybody, once I walked through the five stages of grief that people, not everybody liked the way I set it up, I said, you know what? The whole goal here is about loving one another, not about running a meeting the way I said a meeting should be run. And so we're giving this a little more freedom and empowerment to the group leaders that they can set that meeting agenda. And so you'll notice on your survey that there are some different focuses that maybe some groups that we're going to be setting up. Some are already started. Some are going to be starting soon. Some will be started over the next couple of years. You can see some of those ideas there. The discipleship group is the groups as we've been doing them. But some others might want a particular Bible study group or some others. You can see some of those other things. And if you thought of something other than what I've got on that list, you can mark that in other. But we're really leaving that over to the leader to accept that. And so when a leader recruit somebody in, they're probably going to tell them, here's what our group's going to be doing. Do you want to be in this kind of group? The second shift is leader-guided recruiting. I know what's really shocked everybody is that there hasn't been 5 weeks of me saying, there's sheets on the back of the table, go sign up for a group. We're not going to be doing that. It's not going to be just things set on the table and volunteer. And this is where I know we're going to have our biggest struggle. This is where there's going to be the biggest rough spot. Because what we're having to do is back up just a little bit. There's fewer groups right now than we've had in the past as we're trying to get this kicked off and started and trying to move in a new trajectory. And I know what that means is that there are going to be some folks who right now are not going to be in a group for a couple of months, maybe even a year, as we take this process over the next year, maybe two, to get this thing going and building to spread throughout the congregation. What we're doing is we're training and empowering and equipping our leaders to do some recruiting. That rather than us just putting sheets for people to volunteer, we're going to have some leaders that are going to do some recruiting. Here's the kind of group I'm setting up. Here's when we're going to meet. Here's what we're going to do. Would you like to be a part of that? One of the reasons we're having you fill this survey out, though, is because we want to get everybody who wants to be involved, involved. And so we want to have understanding of who's already in a group and who's not. That way we can give to the leaders a pool of people that they can turn to and recruit from. So please do that. Now, it may take several months before someone recruits you. That may be what happens. But we've got to have some kind of transition process. Please understand, if you are in a group in the fall, that does not necessarily mean you're already in a group now. Some of those groups have reconvened and started with that. If you haven't been asked within the last month or so to be in a group that's continuing on right now, then mark on there, rather than I am in a group and here's whose group I was in the fall, mark I want to be in a group. Because we're not just assuming that because someone was in a group in the fall, or because some of those leaders aren't even leading right now for various reasons. So please make sure you understand that. That's why we need you to fill out this survey, so that the leaders can know a pool of people to recruit from. The third practical shift is a leader-guided calendar. The other thing we're not going to do anymore is, all right, we're going to start February 15th. We're going to be done April 15th. We're going to start again July 5th. We're going to end August 7th. We're going to start again September 10th, and we're going to end November. We're not doing that. What we're doing is giving the leaders the empowerment and the group to work together to decide how this group is going to work. Do you want to meet every other week? Do you want to meet twice a week? Do you want to meet for 8 weeks and take a four-week break, and then meet for 8 weeks again and take a four-week break? That's the leaders are going to be working on that. And so what that means is we're not going to have groups that last for 8 weeks and then kind of break up and a new set of groups 8 weeks later. We're not going to do that. Basically, it's a leader-guided calendar. Leader-guided growth. So what we've tried to do for growth in this past is we hoped that every session we'd be able to add some groups and more people would volunteer. That's not what's happened. And so what we are now pushing toward, and this is one of the big reasons why we're making this shift, is if the leaders are recruiting, the leaders are going to guide growth in the group so that as the group grows, then the groups can birth off into more groups and more people can be involved. And so rather than just kind of hoping growth will happen by having new signups every couple of months, we're really empowering and equipping our leaders to push that growth of their group so that then the number of groups can grow. Leader-guided growth. And that turns into leader-guided leader development. There is a mark on the sheet that says, hey, I'd like to be a leader someday. Please go ahead and mark that if you really would. But understand that for the most part, with exceptions, but for the most part, where our leaders are going to come from is the groups that are already in existence. Because we're training the present leaders to work with other folks to lead groups. And then what will happen is as that group grows, training them for that group to then birth off another group so that it expands. And then more people can be added in. And through that means, a little bit more organically, we can have these groups grow together and expand throughout the congregation. So really, the big thing that what we're seeing here is we're going to have a shift from here's a program, here's the rules, here's the regulations, too. Here's some leaders. We're working with the leaders to train and grow groups of Christians to work with disciples so they can grow, training them to work with other disciples so they can grow, training them to work with other disciples so they can grow. Does that sound familiar? I think there's some Bible passages that talk about that sort of thing. So that's what we're really working on here. I want to stop for just a moment, and I want to invite Tim Fannin, our deacon, and Charlie Nowlin to come up on the stage. The reason why I'm bringing these two fellows up here is because they have both been integrally involved in our house-to-house process from the very beginning. Tim Fannin, over this next year, is essentially, as one of our deacons, going to be taking over this process and this program. And so I'm going to ask him to speak for just a moment about our house-to-house and the benefits of it. And then Charlie Nowlin, who has been a group leader, has been a group participant, I just want him to share some of the benefits and blessings he's received. I just want you to hear some of what these fellows have to say.
Good morning. I've got to say, I've been a big fan of Ecclesiastes 4 for a long time now. When Mandy and I got married a little over 15 years ago, we had it as a foundational passage for our wedding ceremony, and we've tried to use it as a foundation for our marriage over the past 15 years. There's a lot of very tactical and practical things that come out of Ecclesiastes 4, and Edwin's been going over some of those this morning. God's word has a lot to say about the closeness and bond we can share with our brothers and sisters in Christ. And that's one of the many reasons I think house to house is a valuable investment of my family's time. All right, I'm going to look for a little bit of audience participation here. If you have been in a house-to-house group with me over the past few years, will you raise your hand? Awesome. I want to say thank you for your encouragement, your support, and your love. And good, you've already dropped your hand, so I can see you're also familiar with how to do this process, so that's good. There are a number of reasons I love house-to-house and could talk about a lot of them, including the people that just had their hands up. But I want to focus this morning on two areas. Intergenerational relationships, which that's a lot of letters, really. I'll talk about that more later. But and growth. So intergenerational relationships. I've been in a number of different groups over the past few years. And in one group, I was the oldest, which is kind of weird. In another group, I was more on the younger side of the spectrum. And in some groups, I've been in the middle. And all of those different life perspectives and experiences is really vital to helping us see what's coming, avoiding pitfalls, like it talks about in Ecclesiastes 4. If we can avoid pitfalls, then we don't have to help someone out of the pit. But whatever happens throughout our lives, we are going to find ourselves in the pit. And I've needed people younger than me, older than me, to help me see what's coming and then to pull me up out of that pit. It's been such a blessing to have the opportunity to have my boys, my two young boys, pray with the group. We split up when we pray at the end of a meeting. We split up men and women. And my boys get a chance to pray with and then listen to some more seasoned saints, some more mature saints pray. And both aspects of that is very encouraging for them. It teaches them a lot, and it gives them a chance to be encouraged by a lot of people older and younger. It's been really a blessing to see the relationships they have formed with a variety of mentors. I know in my life, I have needed support from people outside of my immediate family. And that's not a knock against my immediate family as much as that's just the way life happens. Sometimes we need someone with a new perspective to come up and help us. And I've received help. I've had someone and many people lift me out of the pit. And I'm looking forward to these relationships that they're building now with people older than them who later on in their lives, when they, for some reason, may not listen to the wise counsel of their parents, will need that kind of help from someone else. People who love God to help them kind of see what that next step needs to be. Second is growth. The conversations that have occurred in our house-to-house groups have been very good as far as the ability for me to take a true look at what's going on in my life. Take a real look at how I compare to what God's word asks of me. And it is just so inspiring the way I can hear people talking about, I have this coworker, I want to share the gospel with them. And then that's in one meeting. And then over the next few weeks, they'll come back and say, hey, this is what happened. This went well. This didn't go well. And then they can receive that encouragement. They can receive that support. And it just inspires me to be more than just an academic exercise of talking about the Bible to what can we do with the information that's given to us and then encourage each other to do more. A springboard to action, if you will. It lifts me up and inspires me to do more about sharing God's love with others. I'm very grateful for the house-to-house opportunities I've had over the past few years, and I'm really looking forward to the support, growth, and love exemplified in house-to-house in 2019.
So Elizabeth and I have been at Livingston for 8 years. In case you're unaware, we have very different personalities. To try and help you understand the difference, an example is our response when we're asked to do something. If you ask Elizabeth to do something, she starts at yes. And unless there's a completely unavoidable conflict, she's in. She's ready to do whatever adventure you've suggested. On the other hand, if you ask me to start to do something, I start with an internal no and try to find an acceptable reason to tell you no. I consider if there's any potential conflict that would allow me to say no, then question if I'm required to join in this activity, and if you push me harder, I'll say no just because it feels good. Some people naturally make close ties. They organically form close relationships with those around them. Some of you are like that. My wife is like that. On the other hand, it's easy for me to sit on a pew with people, say no to things, and make only surface-level connections with those around me. Whichever group you fall into, these connections are essential in our Christian walk. I had the opportunity to meet with a small group of men for a couple years prior to the house-to-house group forming. When I first came to Livingston, I was dealing with quickly moving into a very different phase of life. The friendships formed around a kitchen table helped me to navigate this transition. The connections made in that community drove my excitement for a small group like House to House that my family could be involved in. Nate was a baby when we joined our first House to House group at the Croziers. We have had an opportunity to meet with four other groups since then, and each of them has helped me grow closer to a group of you and closer as a family. The opportunity to hear perspectives from other Christians has allowed me to consider the messages in a much more thorough and applicable way. Also, the opportunity to share my thoughts in a group setting has challenged me to solidify my beliefs and forced me to put words to these thoughts. At times, I've been unwilling to share thoughts that I considered might be unwelcome by the group. I found that those are the thoughts that, when shared, bring us closer together. It can be easy to give cookie-cutter answers that will arouse no dissension, but closeness only comes when we allow ourselves to be challenged, encouraged, and supported by our Christian brothers and sisters. I carefully consider the things my family spends time on, especially on a weeknight. The connection and growth that House to House provides continues to be an opportunity that my family looks forward to. Livingston needs to be a group of connected Christians, and House to House is an opportunity to grow closer to other members of our Christian family and to grow in our relationship to God. Thank you.
I should have let those guys preach the sermon. A small group is better than an isolated church member. And one of the things that has driven this is as I've tried to champion this and try to get more of us involved in this, and even championing the shift, is a statement that I learned years and years ago. It's a mantra that I learned from groups in recovery, 12-step groups, but I think it's just absolutely applicable. And I love this statement. I think I've mentioned it here before. If we make it, I make it. If we make it, I make it. That's that mountain man. That mountain man didn't make it because he made it. He made it because we made it. And far too often I spend all my time hoping I can make it and trying to figure out how I can make it. And the way I can make it is not by doing that, but it's by connecting with others. And we make it. It's by being there to lift up and be lifted up. It's by being there to resist with one another the attacks. It's by being there to provide survival and warmth in the cold of the world and Satan's attack. If we make it, I make it. This process of shifting is going to... I talked with the leaders yesterday. I said, I just have to confess this. I'm a bit of a control freak. It's hard for me to say, let's back off from the rules that I set up on this and let's let this grow through the congregation in a more organic fashion. But that's what we're going to do. But that does mean we're going to go through a little bit of a blip right here. And I'm asking you to be patient. Because our goal is that everybody who wants to be in a group gets in one over the next year or so. And our goal is to help those who right now don't want to be in a group understand how great it is. So we're going to be working on you. I'm going to ask those guys to get back up. If you would take those surveys in these sections, if you would bring them over here to this aisle, and in these sections over here, if you'd pass them over to that middle aisle, go ahead and pass those over. And guys, if you would pick those up, and you can put the rest of your notes away. We're going to have an invitation here in just a moment. Brother Ryan's going to lead us in another song. While those are being picked up, I'm just going to let you know, again, the reason for those surveys is some good insight that we have to what we need to do, particularly maybe if there's other shifts that we need to make, particularly who we can help, what kind of things will benefit us. And so hopefully you got those surveys filled out, and that'll help us find people that we can invite in. All right. All right, fellas, if you'll just get those back to Dave Morrow, and he'll get those to me and Tim. Thank you so much for your patience as we've talked about this. It's been a little bit different, not just a sermon, just a sermon. When is it ever just a sermon here, right? Am I right? Come on. But it was not the normal sermon. It's not the normal sermon that we do, but a little bit of interaction regarding some of the work that we're doing here. And I appreciate your patience with that. And I appreciate your prayers regarding this part of our discipleship circle. I do want to wrap up with the fact that being a part of a small group isn't going to help you if you're not a part of God's group. There are a lot of folks that are connected in groups that have relationships with people, and it helps them live life. And it's all over the world. Folks know that they need to get in those kind of relationships. But the thing you need to understand, if you're not in Jesus, that's not really helping you ultimately. Because one of these days, this life is going to be over. And for all the help that you've gotten getting through this life, if you haven't gotten the help that Jesus offers to get you into the next life, all of that's going to fall apart. Because there is a next. There is something else coming. There is an eternity. And that's really why we want to have these groups, because we're preparing for that and we're helping one another. I want to encourage you to be in Jesus Christ. Now, as I said at the beginning in Ecclesiastes 4, 9 through 12, that threefold cord, some people say that third cord is God being involved in the relationship. It might be. And the reason I say it might be is because I know that statement is true. Whether that's what the preacher meant, I know that's true. The relationships only matter if God, through Jesus Christ and His Spirit, are a part of it. Jesus went to the cross so that everything else we do would matter. Have you gone to the cross with Jesus? Jesus said, "He that believes and is baptized will be saved." Have you been buried with Jesus? Jesus was raised to walk in new life. Have you been resurrected to walk in new life with Jesus? We'd like to help you with that this morning. If we can, we invite you, come right down to the front as we stand and sing this song, and we'll help you out.